Hey everyone, welcome back. We know you're all busy law students, Rada, trying to make sense of these, well, dense legal concepts as quickly as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Time is definitely precious.
So we thought for today's deep dive, we'd tackle a case that's pretty foundational for understanding, well, online trademark law as it exists today.
Definitely a landmark case.
It's the 2000 decision of 800JR Cigar versus GoTo.com.
Oh, yeah, classic.
So this case, it really grappled with a question that was super groundbreaking back in the early days of the internet. Could selling trademarks as keywords for search engine ads, you know, those little ads that pop up when you search for something, could that actually be considered trademark infringement?
Yeah, it was uncharted territory back then. It really forced the courts to start figuring out how those traditional trademark principles we all learn about in law school actually apply to this whole new world of online advertising, a world that was just starting to take shape.
It's wild to think about how much things have changed online since then, right?
It's mind-boggling, really.
But this case, this 800JR Cigar case, it's still so relevant. It's cited all the time in later decisions. So for this deep dive, we've got some pretty great resources to work with. We've got excerpts from, well, let's call it pasted text. It's got some interesting insights and kind of helps guide our discussion, keeps us on track.
Always helpful.
And then we've got a really in-depth case brief that just does a fantastic job of unpacking all the complexities of this decision. It even includes perplexity analysis.
Oh, cool. I always find those fascinating. Perplexity analysis really helps you understand the reasoning behind the court's decision.
And then just to round things out, we've got a more standard case brief, you know, the kind you probably see all the time in law school. Nice and concise, gives us a good overview.
A solid foundation.
Exactly. So our mission today, and I think this is important for you as a listener, is to, you know, pull out the key takeaways from all these different sources to understand what the core conflict was in this case, why it mattered so much, and what kind of lasting impact it's had.
Basically saving you the trouble of wading through all those legal documents yourself. We'll do the heavy lifting for you.
Exactly. All right. So with all that said, let's jump right in. Let's set the scene. We've got JR Cigar. They're a long-standing business selling discount cigars. They've been around for over 30 years.
Wow, that's a long time.
Yeah, they've got all these registered trademarks like JR Cigars and, you know, variations of that.
Makes sense. Protect their brand.
And of course, like any good business in the late 90s, early 2000s, they've got a website, jrcigars.com. You know, kind of a traditional business trying to make their mark online.
Right, trying to ride that .com wave.
Exactly. Now, on the other side of the ring, we've got GoTo.com.
GoTo.com, huh? No, that's a name I haven't heard in a while.
I know, right? Not exactly a household name anymore. Sure. But back then, they were a big deal in the search engine world.
Oh, yeah. They were one of those early players.
They were actually pioneers of this pay-for-priority search engine model. So basically, advertisers would bid on certain keywords, and the higher they bid, the more prominent their ad would be in the search results for those terms.
So basically, whoever paid the most got to be at the top of the page.
Pretty much. Now, this is where things start to get, well, interesting. The conflict in this case arose because GoTo was selling, you know, those keywords we were just talking about, specifically JR Cigar and variations of it, to JR Cigar's competitors.
That's tricky.
So think about it. You're a customer. You want some discount cigars. You go online. You search for JR Cigar. You're expecting to, you know, see JR Cigar's website right there at the top of the results.
Makes sense.
But instead, what do you see? Ads for other cigar retailers, JR Cigar's direct competitors.
Yeah.
And why? Because those competitors paid GoTo for the privilege of using JR Cigar's trademarks as keywords.
Oh, so that's the core of the problem, the potential for customer diversion.
Exactly. And that's what JR Cigar was arguing, that this practice was causing them real harm. That GoTo was essentially profiting off their trademarks, driving customers away from their website and into the arms of their competitors.
Yeah, I can see why they'd be upset. Seems like a pretty clear-cut case, right?
Well, not so fast. It's actually more complicated than you might think, because it raised some really fundamental legal questions.
Ah, Traz.
Well, first and foremost, the court had to determine if what GoTo was doing even qualified as trademark use in commerce.
Right, that's essential. You can't have trademark infringement if there isn't a legally recognized use of the mark in the first place.
Exactly. So the court had to figure out, does selling a trademark as a keyword, even if it's not actually being displayed in the ad itself, does that constitute use under the law?
It's an interesting question, for sure.
And then there's the big one. The question that's at the heart of most trademark infringement cases. Was there a likelihood of confusion? In other words, were consumers likely to be confused about the source of the goods or services being advertised because of GoTo's practice?
Yeah, that's the classic trademark test.
Right. And in this online context, it gets even more nuanced because we have to consider this idea of initial interest confusion.
Initial interest confusion. Can you break that down for us?
Sure. Basically, it's the idea that even if a consumer eventually figures out that they've clicked on the wrong link, you know, they realize they're not on the J.R. Cigar website after all, that initial moment of confusion, that initial attraction to the competitor's ad because it was triggered by the use of J.R. Cigar's trademark, that can still be legally problematic.
So even if they ultimately figure things out, that initial misdirection, that initial interest sparked by the improper use of the trademark, that's enough to potentially cause harm.
Exactly. So the court had to grapple with that. On top of all that, they also had to consider the issue of trademark dilution.
Dilution, right. That's about protecting the distinctiveness of a trademark, preventing it from being weakened.
Right. So the court had to figure out, was what GoTo doing actually diluting J.R. Cigar's trademarks? Was it weakening the ability of those marks, those famous marks, to uniquely identify J.R. Cigar's products?
I imagine that's a tough one to prove.
It is. And even before getting into that, the court had to determine if J.R. Cigar's marks were even famous enough to qualify for dilution protection. What was the standard for fame in this context?
That's a good point. Fame is a pretty important legal concept in trademark law.
And then last but not least, there was the question of the Communications Decency Act, the CDA.
CDA, Section 230, a real hot button issue these days.
You said it. This case was decided back in 2000, so well before all the recent debates about social media and content moderation.
Right, different context.
But the issue was still relevant. Could that law, which was designed, at least in part, to shield online platforms from liability for content posted by third parties, could it protect GoTo from liability in this situation?
Ah, so the question was GoTo simply a neutral platform, or were they actively participating in the alleged infringement?
Exactly. Lots of tricky legal issues to unpack. So let's dive into what the court actually decided.
All right, let's get into the nitty-gritty.
So first and foremost, the court found that GoTo was indeed using J.R. Cigar's trademarks in a way that was legally relevant. And they actually identified three specific ways in which GoTo was doing this. This was kind of a big deal.
It was a precedent-setting decision in many ways. Okay, so what were those three key uses the court pointed to?
Well, the first one is probably the most straightforward. The court said that by accepting bids from J.R. Cigar's competitors for keywords that were, you know, identical or very similar to J.R. Cigar's registered trademarks, GoTo was in fact using those trademarks.
Makes sense. It's like they were directly profiting off those trademarks by selling them as keywords.
Exactly. The second way was a bit more nuanced. The court found that by ranking those paid advertisements above the organic, non-paid search results, GoTo is actively shaping the user experience in a way that could steer customers toward J.R. Cigar's competitors.
It's not just about displaying information neutrally, right? It's about how you display it, how you arrange things on the page.
Exactly. You're influencing where people click, where their attention goes.
Okay.
And then the third way, and this was particularly damning, was through GoTo's search term suggestion tool.
They're what now? I don't think I've heard of that one.
This tool actually identified which of J.R. Cigar's trademarks were the most popular, the most effective search terms. And then, get this, it actively marketed those exact terms to J.R. Cigar's competitors, encouraging them to bid on them.
Whoa, that's pretty blatant.
It is. And the court actually quoted this in their decision. They wrote, "Through the search term suggestion tool, GoTo identifies those of J.R.'s marks which are effective search terms and markets them to J.R.'s competitors." It really paints a picture of GoTo actively facilitating the use of J.R. Cigar's trademarks by their rivals.
Yeah, that's not a good look. So they established use. What about likelihood of confusion? Did the court say that GoTo's practices were actually causing consumers to be confused?
Well, not definitively. Our case brief mentions that summary judgment was denied on this issue.
Summary judgment. Can you refresh my memory on what that means? I'm a little rusty on my civil procedure.
Oh, sure. So summary judgment is basically when the court can make a ruling without a full trial. If there's like no genuine dispute about the facts of the case, they can just decide the legal issues without going through the whole trial process.
Right. So no summary judgment here, meaning
that the court found there were some genuine factual issues that needed to be explored further. They couldn't definitively say, just based on the initial evidence, whether or not consumers were likely to be confused.
But they didn't dismiss the claim altogether. So what were some of the factors they highlighted as potentially contributing to confusion.
So one of the big things the court considered was that there was actual evidence that J.R. Sagar had experienced some diversion of online traffic. And this diversion was a direct result of GoTo's bidding process and their use of J.R. Sagar's trademarks. The court specifically said, and this is a direct quote, "There is evidence that J.R. has suffered from the diversion occasioned by GoTo's bidding process and its use of J.R.'s marks."
So it wasn't just theoretical harm. There was some real-world impact.
Exactly. The court also considered things like, you know, how long had this been going on? Were there any documented instances of confusion? What was GoTo's intent in selling these particular keywords? And, of course, they looked at the potential for initial interest confusion, like we were talking about earlier.
So even if a consumer eventually realized they weren't on the J.R. Sagar website, that initial click on the competitor's ad, that was still a factor.
Absolutely. It all added up to enough of a question about confusion that the court said, okay, we need more information. This needs to go to trial.
Makes sense. So use was established. Likelihood of confusion was still up in the air. What about dilution?
Right. Dilution. So remember, for a dilution claim to succeed, the trademark has to be considered famous.
Famous. It's such a loaded term, even in the legal world.
I know, right? But the court actually did find that J.R. Sagar's trademarks were famous for the purposes of those anti-dilution statutes. And what's interesting is that they reached this conclusion without, you know, the kind of extensive consumer surveys that are often used to prove fame.
Really? So how did they determine fame in this case?
They based their decision on a few key things. The fact that J.R. Sagar had those federal trademark registrations, that they had a substantial sales volume over a significant period of time, and there was evidence that the J.R. Sagar brand was recognized by others in the industry.
So a kind of holistic assessment of their brand recognition.
Exactly. The court even stated explicitly, the court is satisfied that J.R.'s marks are famous for purposes of the dilution statutes.
So J.R. Sagar cleared that hurdle. That's a pretty big win for them.
It was. It meant their dilution claim could also move forward.
What about the CDA, though? Did GoTo try to argue that Section 230 shielded them from liability?
Oh, absolutely they did.
Yeah.
That was a major part of their defense.
Yeah.
The court was not persuaded. They flat out rejected that argument.
Interesting. Why?
Well, they said that Section 230 of the CDA is mainly meant to protect those internet service providers, you know, those websites and platforms, from being held liable for content that's created and posted by their users, you know, third parties. But in this case, GoTo wasn't just a passive platform. They weren't just displaying content created by someone else. They were actively involved in their own advertising business practices. They designed the keyword bidding system. They controlled how ads were ranked. And remember that search term suggestion tool? That was all them.
Right, right. They were more than just a neutral platform. They were players in the game.
Exactly. And the court basically said, you can't hide behind the CDA when your own business practices are directly contributing to potential infringement.
So the CDA doesn't give you a free pass to just do whatever you want.
Nope, not at all. The court made it very clear that online platforms, even back in 2000, couldn't just claim blanket immunity under the CDA if their own actions were the problem.
That's a crucial point. The CDA doesn't shield you from the consequences of your own business model and practices, especially when it comes to trademark law.
Precisely. So to sum up this part of the decision, the court dismissed J.R. Sagar's claims under the New Jersey Consumer Fraud Act and the Federal Telemarketing Act because, well, they weren't really applicable in this specific instance. But they allowed the trademark infringement and dilution claims to proceed, setting the stage for a potential trial.
So big picture, the court said that GoTo.com selling trademarks as keywords, that was trademark use, and that use could potentially lead to both trademark infringement and dilution. And crucially, GoTo couldn't use the CDA as a get-out-of-jail-free card for their own business practices.
Exactly. In this case, it wasn't just some, you know, obscure legal footnote. It had huge implications for the development of online trademark law. It established this really important precedent that selling trademarks as keywords could be considered trademark use, and that could open you up to some serious legal liability.
Yeah, it was a landmark decision, and its influence can be seen in so many later cases that dealt with online advertising. Cases like 1-800-CONTACTS versus Lens.com, which really dug deep into those standards around keyword advertising, and it even impacted how big companies like Google structured their AdWords policies and dealt with the legal challenges that came their way. It's a case that's still cited all the time.
It really highlights how the law has to adapt to these, well, these rapid technological changes.
It's like a constant game of catch-up.
It is. So the key takeaway for you, dear listener, as you're navigating the world of trademark law, is that even in those early days of the internet, courts were already starting to figure out how to apply those traditional trademark principles to this whole new digital landscape.
Adapting to the times.
Exactly. And the concept of use in commerce, it proved to be incredibly adaptable. And those nuances surrounding likelihood of confusion, including that idea of initial interest confusion, they became, and honestly, they remain, absolutely critical in the online world.
So even a fleeting moment of confusion can have legal consequences.
It can. Which leads us to a final thought for you to chew on. How might those principles we've been talking about today, the ones that were established in this foundational case, how might they apply to the online advertising landscape we see today? Think about it. AI-powered, targeted advertising, constantly evolving search algorithms, and the sheer number of different online platforms where advertising now takes place, it's mind-boggling.
It really is. It's a whole new ballgame.
So what new challenges might we face in the future when it comes to protecting trademarks in these increasingly complex and dynamic digital environments? That's something to think about.
A lot to ponder.
It is. But that's all the time we have for today's deep dive. Thanks for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
Until next time. Keep those legal brains buzzing.
And good luck with your studies.
Bye for now.
See you next time.